shall I come before the Lord? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
So right out of the gate here, let me just recognize that Micah is not just a prophet. The man is a poet. Oh, he is. It's hard to appreciate in English, but let me give you an example here, okay? In chapter 1, which is not what you just heard, but in chapter 1, Micah lists a bunch of cities and then tells us how doomed they are. In English, it's pretty dry. It reads like this. Tell it not in Gath, weep not at all. In Beth Lephrah, roll yourselves in the dust. Pass on your way, inhabitants of Shephir, in nakedness and shame. You get the idea, I take it. But if we translate the names of those Hebrew cities into what they actually meant, you can appreciate Micah's brilliance here. You ready? As scholars Tremper Logman and Raymond Diller translate it, it goes like this. Tell it not in Tellington. Wail not in Wailing. Dust Manor shall eat dirt. Dressy Town flees naked. Safefold will not save. Well, Walchester's walls are down, and Bitterton drinks a bitter dose. It's like saying, it's going to be winter will fall in Somerset, right? You catch it? It's brilliant. It's brilliant poetry, and it is scathing poetry. Micah is an amazing wordsmith. He paints pictures with his words that are so realistic, they'll catch your breath. In fact, Micah's book, if you go and read it, and if you've got nothing else to do this week, I encourage you to do so. Micah's book is just a series of pictures he's painting with words. Actually, if you start to really look at them, there are basically three pictures Micah paints over and over and over again. I'll warn you, though, the first two of those three, they're not exactly pictures you'd hang in your foyer. See, the first picture Micah paints is a picture of a perverted people. If you read the whole book, which I did this week, and if you keep a list of everything Micah accuses his nation, its leaders, and its people of doing, like I did this week, you emerge with a very detailed and very depressing picture. First and most important, Micah paints a picture of a faithless people. In this picture, the faithful have disappeared, he says. Statues of pagan gods scatter the landscape. The pagan worship is enshrined in official law. This country that should be full of God's presence feels utterly barren. No one upright is left, Micah says. Instead, in their place, Micah paints a picture of evil people run rampant. The powerful see fields, want them, and just take them, no matter who they belong to. The wealthy oppress householder and house, people and their inheritance. It just rolls off the tongue as you hear it. Actually, and in one of his most brilliant passages, Micah says that these people are so bad that the preacher that would fit them would be the one who stands in the pulpit and preaches the good news of getting wasted. I mean that. He would stand up there, drink yourselves into a coma and you will discover new life. I mean, that's my paraphrase, but it's on point. You just go to chapter 2, you'll see what I'm talking about. Micah goes so far as to describe people's behavior as cannibalism, which is probably not literal. But only probably. I mean, kids are watching, so I'm not going to read this passage right now. But just try to get through the first let's say, 3 verses of chapter 3 without feeling nauseous. I mean, on top of all that, there's more. I mean, on top of the faithlessness and the evil, Micah also paints a picture of a people living in denial. Micah says that his country's leaders judge for a bribe, her priests teach for a price, and her prophets tell fortunes for money. Yet they all lean upon the Lord and say, is not the Lord among us? No disaster is going to come upon us. When Micah tries to point out they're wrong, when Micah starts painting these pictures with the hope that people will see just how far they have fallen, he gets told to shut up. That's it. One should not preach of such things, they tell him. Faithlessness, evil, and denial. These are the marks of Micah's world and the palette for his first picture. And I don't care how you have ever felt, currently feel, or will feel about the state of our country and its future, but your worst nightmares pale in comparison to Micah's reality. Right? Micah knows how things are. And Micah knows there's going to be a price for it. That's the second picture he paints. The second picture Micah paints is of their near future, the fall of the once mighty nation of Israel. The nation will be plowed like a field, he says. The city will be bombarded into ruins and rubble, and the temple will be buried under bushes. There will be a gnawing hunger within you, Micah says, but you will stockpile food just to see it vanish into thin air. You will do all the work to make grain and oil and wine only to see the plants wither away before your eyes. The devastation in Micah's second picture is total. He knows it's coming. He knows it's reality. If the present may be depressing, but the near future is utterly devastating. Again, not pictures you'd hang in your foyer. But there is a third picture. A third and final picture Micah paints, that of a very far off but equally certain future. Now, I get Advent doesn't start till next week. All our decorations are all waiting in the hallway. They'll be up here next Sunday. Tune in for that. We're not supposed to be talking about the baby Jesus until then. But it's a pandemic, and we're all tired, so let's have a little indulgence here, shall we? Let's start Christmas just a little bit early, all right? Because here's the picture Micah paints in chapter 5. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, you who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is from old, from ancient days. And he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they shall live secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be the one of peace. That's Micah's third picture. Micah's third picture, it's as detailed as the other two, but now the palette has gone from grayscale to pastels, all right? The third picture is beautiful. It includes one of Micah's most famous lines, where he says, they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore, but they shall all sit under their own vines and under their own fig trees, and no one shall make them afraid. You don't have to speak Hebrew to appreciate the beauty of those lines. And you don't have to be an ancient Israelite to be hoping for the day that Micah is talking about, the picture he's painting. A day when violence is gone. No one has to live in fear of another person. A day when the people of the world work together regardless of nationality or party. A day when people are unafraid to gather together and worship together and celebrate the holidays together. I mean, I long for that day, don't you? Micah sure did. He paints it over and over and over again because it's the only good one he's got. But Micah knows something too. Micah knows just how far the road is from those first two pictures to the third. It's a long road, longer than we know, longer than we like for sure, longer than we can tolerate some days. In the road to that third picture, it's hard to see. It's hard to keep going. I mean, when there are days where the number of dead goes from 200,000 to 220 to now 250, it's hard. As businesses' bottom lines go from black to red to non-existent because they can't be open anymore, that's hard. As political hope settles back into partisan reality, that's hard. As we realize, again, that we've worked so hard to get to the top of a hill only to see another one rising before us. It's a hard road to walk. It's a long, hard road to walk. And on days like that, we ask the question, the same question Micah asked, how do we keep walking that long road on such hard days? In his seminal work, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, theologian James Cone speaks of the struggle of African Americans in the years 1880 to 1940, when between 4,000 and 5,000 African Americans were killed by lynching. That's 6 people a month for 60 years. And Cone speaks of the despair that pulled down the spirit of the black community in the face of such violence. The threat of lynching was like a shadow they could not shake, he said. Dread and powerlessness in the face of the ever-present threat of death on the lynching tree impelled blacks to cry out from the depth of their spiritual being, "Oh Lord, oh my Lord, oh my good Lord, keep me from sinking down." But Cone also talks about how they kept going, how they kept walking. These people who had the world against them. These people who invented blues and wrote songs with lines like, "Every day feels like murder here." Cone shares how they walked their long road. And there's a lot of things he says, but one thing he emphasizes, they sang as they walked. Cone writes that the spirituals, the gospel songs, and the hymns focused on how Jesus achieved salvation for the least through his solidarity with them, even unto death. Cone writes that in the mystery of God's revelation, black Christians believe that just knowing that Jesus went through an experience of suffering in a manner similar to theirs gave them faith that God was with them, even in the suffering on lynching trees, just as God was present with Jesus through the suffering on the cross. He says that they sang spirituals like the one that goes, "Poor little Jesus boy, made him be born in a manger. World treated him mean, treats me mean too. Look at how they done my Lord." According to Cone, African Americans in the lynching era found strength through the felt presence of God with them and within them. And that strength then did lead to action. Small actions at first, letter here, protest there. But that strength through the felt presence of God, through those little actions, is what gave birth to the civil rights movement. A nonviolent movement working for justice, but still loving kindness, empowered by the felt presence of God. That's Micah's answer, if you hadn't caught it yet. That's Micah's answer to the question. How do you walk the long road from those first two pictures to the third? Well, you do justice, you love kindness, and you walk humbly with God. The three are inseparable, you understand. They have to go together. If you try and do justice without loving kindness, you get very cynical very fast. If you love kindness, but you don't work for justice, you let evil spread in the world with a smile on your face and everyone sees your hypocrisy. And if you try and do either one without that humble walk with God, you will crack and you will break. And it won't take all that long. This short little series that we're wrapping up today, it's about soul care, you remember? About keeping yourself healthy, spiritually, but really holistically. How to stay a person the way you're meant to be, even when things get hard. So how do you stay healthy when a pandemic that you really hope would be winding down about now is worse than ever? You do justice, you love kindness, and you walk humbly with God. How do you stay healthy when bills pile up and income runs dry and you've called in every favor you have? Well, you do justice, you love kindness, and you walk humbly with God. How do you stay healthy when the political solution you were certain would fix everything turns out to be either no longer possible or far less effectual than you thought it would be? Well, you do justice, you love kindness, and you walk humbly with God. How do you stay healthy when the goals and values and morals you were certain would catch fire and rekindle the soul of a nation are now being rejected again? Well, guess what? You do justice, you love kindness, and you walk humbly with God. How do you stay healthy when the holidays were coming and you finally had something to look forward to, but reality slams your front door in your face again? You do justice, you love kindness, and you walk humbly with God. What does soul care look like when the road is this long? It looks like doing justice, loving kindness, and walking humbly with God, just like it always did. Nothing's changed. Thousands of years, nothing has changed. Micah knew that those three things were the only way to get through the fall of Jerusalem. African Americans in the lynching era knew that those three things were the only way to get through the fear of a mob showing up at your door. And we know that those three things are the only way to get through our long, hard road. All three. Justice, kindness, and a humble walk. Because without justice, you're a hypocrite. Without kindness, you're a jerk. And without the felt presence of God living within you, you will give up long before the road ends. But with all three, with justice, kindness, and a humble walk, there's nothing you can't endure. There's no road you cannot walk. There's no burden you cannot carry. There's nothing you can't face while still staying faithful. That's the secret. Three steps, no more, no less. Whatever the road is, however long it is, whatever your circumstances are, the people of God have seen them, faced it, walked that road long ago. Their wisdom has been passed on to you. The secret has never changed. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God. Amen.